Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And thank you for joining us here for AOA, Agriculture of America. Great to have you along for another conversation about issues impacting farming, ranching, and rural America. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Coming up on today's program, we got a great lineup for you. Towards the end of the show, we're going to talk with Gage Zobel from the international law firm Dorsey & Whitney about some of the recent PFAS news with the EPA, or forever chemicals as they are commonly referred to. We're going to have that conversation later in the show. In segment three, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk with Cam Quarles from the National Potato Council. We're going to get an update on some of the issues surrounding fresh access for potatoes to Japan, also the dietary guidelines process, and much more. Looking forward to talking with Cam Quarles again coming up here later in the show. In segment two, we're going to talk the recent cattle on feed report and the overall outlook for the beef herd with Dr. Daryl Peel from Oklahoma State University. That's all coming up here on today's AOA, brought to you by Cenex. As a farmer, unpredictability is inevitable. Protect equipment with Cenex Premium Diesel to keep you in the field. Learn more at your nearest Cenex location or visit cenex.com. for more details. Well, helping us kick off the show here today as we talk Farm Bill and other policy news out of Washington, D.C. Great to have her join us on the show. She is a food and agriculture policy reporter for Politico. Meredith Lee Hill joins us here on AOA. Meredith, thanks so much for the time. Hope you're doing well.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the Farm Bill, and I know you've reported on this. We've been talking about it, of course, the ongoing debate trying to get a new Farm Bill done, and I know House Ag Chair G.T. Thompson has talked and stated that he would like to see something out of his committee by Memorial Day. Get us up to speed on that and some of the latest you are hearing there on Capitol Hill in terms of the this Farm Bill negotiation.
Right, so this Farm Bill is expected to top $1.5 trillion in spending over the next 10 years, so it's a massive bill, and because of that, there's been a huge struggle in recent months and even in recent years between Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill about how to pay for it while also bolstering farm safety net programs. And so as you mentioned, Chair Thompson is trying to move a Farm Bill out of the House. As we've reported, he's planning to release a draft of that bill in the coming weeks, and then he's eyeing the second or the third week of May for a committee markup and a vote on the legislation. And they've been going back and forth with Democrats for some time about how to pay for the bill. And he's put forward a proposal that would do a couple of things that would include limiting future updates to the program that serves as the basis for the SNAP food benefit program, also taking billions of dollars from an internal USDA fund to use it for crop insurance and reference price boosts and other projects and programs in the Farm Bill. And he also wants to roll $13 billion in the Climate Agriculture Funds from Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act into the Farm Bill so that it's there for years to come, and then also potentially opening up those programs to wider conservation uses. But it's worth noting, as Chair Thompson is trying to push this forward, a significant number of Democrats on Capitol Hill, especially senior Democrats, have essentially resigned themselves to the likely scenario that Congress will need to pass another Farm Bill extension this year before September 30th, given the ongoing turmoil in the House GOP conference and the demands from Republicans about how to pay for the bill. So that is kind of a huge roadblock right now in the talks. But there are a dozen or so Democrats on the Ag Committee in the House who are in tough, really tough races this fall, who essentially are going to have to decide in the next few weeks if they stick with those senior Democrats and oppose, likely, this Farm Bill draft coming out of the House Ag Committee, or if they vote with Republicans to advance it.
Well, and thinking about some of that that disconnect on the House side, it seems like a lot of the same on the Senate side as well between Democrats and Republicans here figuring out this Farm Bill. And I know I've talked with members on the Senate side that they've indicated, Senator Bozeman, for instance, the ranking Republicans indicated that he feels they might wait to kind of follow the lead of House Ag Chair Thompson in terms of putting out some text on a farm bill. But again, just this, the political, with an election year, to your point, it kind of seems like it's adding to some of that turmoil here and some of the rising tensions, really, both in the House and the Senate in terms of this farm bill.
Right. Ranking Member Bozeman has told us that he is essentially waiting for Chair Thompson to release his House Farm Bill draft before Senate Republicans release what we've reported on is sort of their framework for putting a farm bill together and the programs that they want to prioritize and how they plan to fund it. That's obviously a major impasse in the Senate. They're having similar problems over how to pay for the bill. And Senate Agriculture Chair Debbie Stabenow, who's retiring at the end of this year, has essentially said both publicly and privately that she's really staking her legacy on protecting the climate funding that might be rolled into the Farm Bill, or at least that's in the Inflation Reduction Act right now, and also nutrition funding. And so if she's told people in public that if Republicans essentially continue to push for what they're pushing for, she's fine with keeping the 2018, the current Farm Bill, in place if that is what it comes down to. Obviously, she wants a Farm Bill if they can hammer something out. There's a growing thinking on Capitol Hill that if there's any chance for a Farm Bill this year still, it will have to come from the Senate and be a Senate-led process and go to the House. The House will have to take it up on something called suspension of the rules, and it'll be need to be carried with a significant number of Democratic votes. So that is something that lawmakers are grappling right now, and we aren't expecting major progress until the lame duck session after the election in November, if there is any progress this year.
All right. A lot of things to watch with this farm bill. We'll continue to follow it. Real quick, Meredith, we have about a minute. I know news coming out here. The FDA, we've got reports bird flu being detected, fragments being detected in retail milk, although FDA's reaffirmed the pasteurization process. Milk is safe to drink, but I know this is a story that is making headlines here in the recent days.
Mm-hmm. Right. The FDA late yesterday essentially confirmed that they have tested retail milk, and some of the samples that they've collected have indicated the presence of bird flu particles under certain testing. But as you mentioned, they maintain that pasteurization is likely to inactivate the virus. And essentially their assessment is that commercial milk at this time is safe to drink. The FDA has said that it'll make additional testing available in the coming days. And that's something that we're watching out for quite a bit. Obviously it's something that trade groups, dairy industry groups quickly mobilized to reinforce that FDA has assess that the milk supply is still safe. But that's something that we're continuing to monitor.
With that, food and agriculture policy reporter for Politico, Meredith Lee Hill. Meredith, thanks so much for joining us on Agriculture of America today. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to getting you back on the show again in the future. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Meredith Lee Hill there with Politico. You can find the latest stories at politico.com. All right, coming up next on the AOA, brought to you by Sedex. After long days in the field, equipment subject to wear, Sedex premium lubricants help keep equipment protected. Learn more at Sedex.com. We'll talk with Dr. Daryl Peel from Oklahoma State University on the way next on AOA. Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, as we examine how the modern cooperative system solves today's biggest challenges. We'll be talking to CHS experts and farmers and ranchers just like you, and we'll learn how cooperatives apply innovation and technology to help co-op owners get more value every day. Join us Around the Table every Tuesday, or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Long hours is the name of the game for fleet operators and for farmers and ranchers. Cenex Premium Diesel helps to keep your trucks on the road. Learn more online at cenex.com. Well, let's turn our attention to what's going on in the cattle industry. The beef herd, the recent cattle on feed report, maybe finally a friendly-ish report for this cattle industry. We're going to talk about all that and more. Joining us now for a conversation, it's always good to catch up with Dr. Daryl Peel from Oklahoma State University. And Dr. Peel, it's great to talk with you again. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Jesse. It's great to visit with you.
Well, I kind of teed it up there. Seemed like that cattle on feed report out last Friday was finally a bit friendly after a few reports in a row there that kind of missed the mark on expectations. Would you view that cattle on feed report as friendly?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously the placement number came in lower than expected. So that's a friendly number. You know, we've had a lot of month-to-month volatility in these cattle on feed reports recently, due to weather, due to other market shocks, due to, you know, just kind of normal volatility, I guess. And so it's kind of important to look at these reports over maybe a bit of an average. I don't get too excited about any one month, but when you look at it over several months, you start to see more of the underlying trends, I think.
Yeah, and that's I like how you put that together. I think it's important to really look at the trends here. And you know, we've been talking so much about the inventory numbers on the beef herd and the tightening of those inventory numbers and moving forward here into 2024. And you mentioned the volatility we've had in the markets from all sorts of different factors. It feels like maybe cattle markets themselves, futures, doing their best here in recent days to try and rebound to some degree, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously this most recent shock involving the influenza, and again, the uncertainty that goes with any kind of new thing like that is best reflected in the futures markets. That's where it's supposed to take place. But it's also, there's a tendency for it to be a bit of an overreaction because initially we just don't know how bad it's going to be. And then you recover from that once you get into the reality, which typically is not the worst case scenario. And so I do think that we're, that we're in the process of rebounding from the standpoint of the futures markets. And of course, cash markets do get impacted when the futures market is impacted. Not as much, but the cash markets also then are bouncing back a little bit.
Well, talk to me about what, thinking of those cash markets, let's go there a little bit, because I feel that futures and cash to some degree have been a little disconnected as of late with all the news impacting the HPAI news you mentioned impacting the cattle futures. You know, I still hear a lot of talk from sale barns. Things are running along pretty hot still out there in feedlot country and at the sale barn. I mean, your thoughts on this overall cash market on the cattle side right now?
Yeah, you know, the fundamentals are very tight and actually continuing to get tighter. That's, you know, that picture from a longer term perspective has been in place for many months now and will continue going forward. And those fundamentals really don't change that much. You know, the beef industry is relatively slow to change when you back it up to looking at the cattle cycle and herd inventories. And so, you know, all of these short term things, again, they get reflected in the futures market. And that's okay. That's where they should be. And they do seem disconnected. In the short run, that futures market can do anything it wants. But at the end of the day, ultimately, the fundamentals are going to prevail, and we're going to come back to that underlying supply situation that's really driving the market right now.
Well, I'm thinking about that supply situation. We know that, of course, it takes time to rebuild the herd, and we've seen plenty of added issues. I think about the wildfires, of course, in the plains and maybe some cattle loss there. You mentioned, you know, this HPAI impact on the markets too and things like that. We haven't seen HPAI, though, in beef cattle, which is a good thing. But I guess a lot of factors here in terms of rebuilding this cattle herd in the U.S. Your thoughts, what's some of the latest you're hearing from producers on this timeline? I mean, is it something we're going to see here throughout this year? Is it a 2025 issue? Is it beyond that? I mean, what's the latest you're hearing, Dr. Peel?
Well, in terms of you know, the process of really starting herd rebuilding, and of course the first step is to stop liquidating. And honestly, I don't think we're quite done with it. I won't be surprised at all if we don't see the beef cow herd drop a little bit further from year to year as we go through 2024. Simply because we started this year with a very limited pipeline of replacement heifers available. And so, you know, cow culling would have to drop in very dramatically in order to even stabilize those numbers. And so I think it's a multi-year process. We might stabilize or come close to it in 2024. I don't think we can even grow much in 2025 if we start trying to retain heifers in 2024. It'll be, you know, into 2026, I think, before we could translate any current actions into significant herd growth. So it's going to be a lengthy process going forward.
We are talking today with Dr. Darrell Peel, Extension Specialist for Livestock Marketing with Oklahoma State University. Dr. Peel, let's talk the meat demand side of this equation as well. The overall economy, of course, inflation. There's been a lot of talk about this. We've had hot inflation numbers here as of late. We're getting into summer grilling season. You know, I know there's going to be a lot of focus on that demand at the grocery store, at the meat counter, et cetera. What are some thoughts you have in terms of that overall meat demand as we get into summer grilling season?
You know, beef demand continues to be remarkably robust. And you know, you can say that going back all the way, you know, even through the pandemic and all the disruptions that happened there and all the subsequent ripple effects from that, you know, beef demand just looks really robust. The retail prices that we have available from USDA are essentially at record levels. We've been averaging, they moved higher in 2023, and we've been maintaining that so far. I look at a whole set of wholesale beef cuts for, you know, sort of breaking down the box beef price at the wholesale level into the components a bit. Looking for things that we talk about all the time. You know, we worry about when beef prices get too high that consumers will begin trading down, moving away from the most expensive products into some more value-based products and so on. You know, there's a little indication of that in the wholesale prices, but honestly, I can't find any significant indication of that. And you know, the bottom line is, you know, beef demand, both the retail grocery and food service continues to be very robust. Going into grilling season, the wholesale prices for the typical grilling meats thus far have basically behaved seasonally. So we see, the more popular grilling steaks and that kind of thing move up seasonally at the wholesale level.
I think it comes back to the old adage. I've heard this time and time again, you know, despite some of the concerns in the overall economy, that meat demand and food service demand, if someone wants a steak, Dr. Peel, they're going to order a steak if as long as they, if they absolutely have to trade down, they will. But if they can make it work, if they want a steak, they're going to get that steak, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, one of the things that's going on, of course, is that we're in a declining beef production setting. So there isn't as much beef available as we go forward. Beef production peaked in 2022. It dropped last year in 2023. It's continuing to drop this year. So there's less beef. So there's a certain amount of rationing going on, which means that some consumers clearly are eating less beef just because there isn't as much beef. And so the most sensitive, the most price sensitive consumers are probably making some adjustments. But we don't see the kinds of things that suggest overall a significant erosion in demand. At the other end of things, as you said, those people that want a steak, even in the face of declining supplies, are going to pay whatever it takes to get a steak.
Well, as we wrap up here, great conversation as always, Dr. Peel. Anything final you'd want to share or reiterate to our cattle producers listening in out there as we continue to watch this overall beef demand and the markets in general?
You know, just jumping back to that cattle on feed report, we talked about the long-term versus the short-run volatility in that thing. The current placement rate for the last year on average, monthly placements, is actually at the lowest level since April of 2017. So we are placing less cattle in the feedlot. Now, the feedlot inventory has stayed above year-ago levels for the last 7 months, and that's only because the marketing rate has dropped even farther than the placement rate. So we're slowing down the marketing rate, and that's allowing feedlots to keep their inventories high. But in total, we're actually producing less beef.
Always appreciate the conversation. Great to talk with you, Dr. Daryl Peel with Oklahoma State University. Thanks so much for joining us on AOA. We'll get you back on the show again real soon.
You bet. Anytime.
Dr. Daryl Peel there, Extension Specialist for Livestock Marketing at Oklahoma State University, joining us here today on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Selecting the right grease is critical. Cenex premium greases help fleets achieve superior strength and performance. Trust your local experts at Cenex to find the right premium grease for you, or visit Cenex.com. We'll talk with Cam Quarles from the National Potato Council on the way right after this on AOA.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your card donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
You're listening to AOA. I'm Jody Heemstra with this check at agricultural market information from the American Ag Network. Corn, well, there's little in the way of market-moving news. The U.S. Corn Belt is slated to get some good rains this weekend, with calls of up to 1 to 3 inches in some parts. Early Wednesday, some very light showers were covering arid parts of Kansas. One well-regarded crop scout has Brazil's corn production pegged at 112 million metric tons. That's 12 million metric tons below USDA's last estimate. The general consensus from CONAB and others is that Brazil's planted area is down close to 10% from a year ago, with an estimated 67% of Brazil's second corn crop pollinating or close to it, the need for rain is immediate. Other crop scouts and analysts also have Argentine corn production as much as 5 million metric tons below USDA's 55 million metric ton estimate. Soybeans, as in corn, analysts and crop scouts have their estimates far below the most recent USDA estimates. A prominent crop scout is leaving his estimates unchanged at 8 million metric tons below USDA's 155 million metric tons. The soybean basis in Brazil is rapidly rising, and compared to a year ago, such a stout basis could imply perhaps the lower estimates are more accurate. It doesn't help that the Brazilian currency has moved up 5% from its recent low. The U.S. wheat markets have growing concerns for dryness in the Black Sea extending into May. Both eastern Ukraine and especially southern Russia appear to be the focus of traders, as it's been those origins that have kept wheat prices under heavy pressure in the past year. Both live cattle and feeder cattle futures are rebounding substantially from their lows during Tuesday. That's testimony to the resiliency of the market due to overall tight supplies. That's a check at agricultural market information from the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. Victory over cancer is in front of us. Right now, cancer research is saving lives. Cancer research, funded by the V Foundation, is leading to new discoveries and new treatments, and ultimately, one day, victory over cancer. Give to the V Foundation. Right now, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will get cancer in their lifetime. Now is your moment. You may save someone you love. 100% of your donation goes directly to game-changing research. 100%. Donate at V.org. Because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And thanks for sticking with us here on AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex. When using high-quality Cenex lubricants, rest assured that you'll get the most out of your equipment. Learn more at Cenex.com or visit your local Cenex location for more information. Well, let's turn our attention to some of the latest policy news and more surrounding the potato industry. Joining us for a conversation here on AOA, always good to talk with Cam Quarles, the CEO of the National Potato Council. Cam, thanks for joining us again on AOA. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Jesse. Good to talk with you, as always.
Well, let's start with the Japanese market for fresh potatoes from the U.S. I know the Japanese prime minister was recently visiting the U.S., and there's a lot of talk surrounding opening up this potentially huge market for the U.S. potato industry. I know there's been some Senate letters and more. Give us an update on the latest surrounding access for fresh potatoes into Japan.
Sure. Yeah, as you very correctly observed, that Prime Minister Kishida was here in town, had a state dinner at the White House a couple of weeks ago. And in conjunction with that visit, we had a number of members of the Senate wrote to President Biden saying, look, this stonewalling, these delays by Japan in terms of allowing U.S. fresh potato, what we call table stock, potato access, they just have to stop. This, as you and I have talked before, Jesse, this is an over 30-year-old request that was made by the U.S. And it's really ramped up over the last 5 years on the U.S. side. It has been elevated to our top agricultural issue between the two countries. But Japan does not in any way want to budge on this issue. It's a huge political issue for them domestically, and essentially it is year after year of stonewalling. So you've got these members of the Senate. You saw also Ambassador Tai was up last week before the Senate Finance Committee, and during that hearing got a lot of questions about what they're going to do over U.S. potato access to Japan.
Well, and you bring up Ambassador Tai, and I know she has been under fire as of late, and the administration's been under fire for lack of trade deals and lack of enforcement and pushing things through. But it sounds like this is a little bit more of an issue from the Japanese side versus the U.S. side wanting to get something done, right, Cam?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's the old adage, Jesse, you can't shake hands with a closed fist. And I think, you know, from Secretary Vilsack, Ambassador Tai, all the way down the undersecretaries, and certainly the ambassador over in Tokyo, Ambassador Emanuel, they've all been pushing hard. But this is, like I said, it's going to take a concerted effort by, you know, all levels of our political folks to get past what, it's not a technical issue anymore. It is simply a political issue in Japan. They do not want to provide this concession to the U.S., and they're going to drag it out as long as they possibly can.
Well, we'll continue to watch that situation. Again, could be a huge, huge market for fresh potatoes from the U.S. to Japan. Let's talk dietary guidelines and that process. We've talked about this before, Cam, trying to keep potatoes as a vegetable. I've said it before, it just seems silly to me that we're having this discussion. Where do things stand with the dietary guidelines process right now?
Well, if it makes you feel better, Jess, it seemed kind of silly and absurd to me as well. Also, you see across the country, we've had both the Senate and the House have voiced their concerns over what continues to appear in the press regarding this process. And the notion that you're going to take potatoes potentially and move them out of the vegetable category and into the grains category, or make America's favorite vegetable interchangeable with grains, it's just kind of strange on its face. You see it in the wake of this of these letters that have come out. Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show has taken up the issue. You've got editorial boards from Seattle to Minnesota to Maine all saying, why would you even consider this? So I think there's been your reaction, Jesse, I think is the reaction of a lot of folks out in the countryside. Again, this process, it happens every 5 years. We believe that it is driving towards a conclusion about the end of 2024. So if there's a second Biden term, they're ready to implement. If there is not a second Biden term, they kind of have their desires locked in. So they're covered either way. From a nutrition perspective, from a horticultural botanical perspective, none of this makes any scientific sense. This is a long-running battle from some folks who really want to limit potato consumption. They want the government to go in and decide that for folks, and we're pushing back. And you know, I'm hopeful that we're getting some traction on this. And it's one of those ideas from Washington that hopefully will be discarded in the end product. But we really won't know for another better than 6 months.
Well, we'll continue to follow and, of course, appreciate the great work that you and the team there at the National Potato Council are doing on that. Again, yeah, it just seems very, very silly that we're even having that debate. We're talking with Cam Quarles, the CEO of the National Potato Council. Cam, let's shift gears and talk Farm Bill and updates there. You have your pulse on things in D.C. and on Capitol Hill. We talked in segment one with Meredith Lee Hill from Politico about some of the timeline in terms of a farm bill. She reiterated that on the House side, Ag Chair G.T. Thompson's hoping for a markup and wants to get some text out by the end of May is what it sounds like here. Is that what you're hearing? I know there just continues to be a lot of tension here between Republicans and Democrats trying to figure out how to fund this farm bill mainly.
Yeah, and you know, there, it really is a huge issue. When you step all the way back, Jesse, you're talking about a bill that's going to be north of $1.2 trillion all in. A huge amount of that, obviously, is the nutrition title. When you look at the big sort of pie chart of what's in the farm bill, the farm the production agriculture part is an amazingly small sliver of a farm bill. That being said, the nutrition component is really important because that's a link to folks who aren't necessarily in rural America. That's, you know, your urban areas, your suburban areas, a lot of benefits flow from the nutrition program to all of the constituent areas of the country. Everything that you're hearing is pretty consistent with what I'm hearing. I think what's driving the House Agriculture Committee, hopefully, to take action in what we call markup a bill, so the committee would do its work in producing the House Agriculture Committee's views on farm policy. That's going to occur sometime before Memorial Day. One of the reasons for that, not the only reason, but one of the reasons is with the congressional budgeting process, that they will get what they call a new baseline for farm spending if they don't act by June 1. And without boring you with all the details that go into a baseline, effectively what it means is the farm bill will get a lot more expensive if they don't act in the month of May. So that's Chairman Thompson, I think, is being he's doing everything that he can do that's under his control to move the process forward. But once it gets past the committee door, who knows what it's going to look like on the floor. You've mentioned a lot of these partisan issues that, you know, the funding issues that are kind of way above anybody's, certainly above our pay grade. Mm-hmm. But I think Chairman Thompson if a window opens up on the floor, you mentioned lame duck, he wants to be ready if that train starts to move. Strategically, it's a smart decision to make.
Well, and real quick to kind of sum up this farm bill fight as well, it feels like a lot of what I've heard, the Senate side kind of waiting to follow the lead of the House side here. And the Senate side has its own issues between Republicans and Democrats, right?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of this, Jesse, is a reflection. It's you know, it's not so much the agricultural policy of all this. It's a reflection that you've got incredibly tight margins right now in the House. You basically have a one seat majority for the Republicans. In the Senate, you have effectively a one seat majority for the Democrats. And, you know, so you've got all of that. There's not a lot of margin for error when you're running things to the floor. And it creates a lot of tension. Everything is complicated today, even more complicated than Washington normally is on a good day.
Yeah, there's a lot to take in here and a lot to consider. We'll continue to follow the issues and, of course, continue to follow the latest from the National Potato Council. Cam, always good to talk with you, sir. Thanks so much for joining us once again on AOA. And we'll look forward to catching up again in the near future. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, Jesse. Thanks so much for the time.
National Potato Council CEO Cam Quarles joining us here today on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Every minute matters on the farm. Bulk diesel fuel storage can boost productivity and maximize your ROI. Learn more at your local Cenex location or visit cenex.com for more information. All right, coming up next as we wrap up AOA today, we're going to get the latest reaction to some of the PFAS news, forever chemical news, from EPA with Gage Zobel, attorney with Dorsey and Whitney. He'll join us next on AOA, Agriculture of America.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. and my electrical was deemed unsafe, and I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is a safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes, and Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families, and it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed, and we feel it, and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
If you're caring for one of the 16 million Americans living with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you probably have many questions. COPD makes it harder to breathe and worsens over time. As a caregiver, you may juggle many roles. Being connected to the right resources can help. That's why the Learn More, Breathe Better program and Respiratory Health Association created the COPD Caregivers Toolkit. This free toolkit will help you better understand the disease, prepare for doctor's appointments, navigate home life changes, help after a COPD flare-up, and stay mentally and physically healthy through it all. Help your loved one live better with COPD. Visit nhlbi.nih.gov/COPD-caregivers.
When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
Farming is dangerous. There's dangers all around us. We work around it and we live around it every day. And we just become desensitized to what's around us.
We go through safety training and, you know, we try and do these things to make sure accidents don't happen, but you just never know.
There are so many farmers that I think take for granted all of the underground utilities that are there.
You don't want to hit a gas pipe because that's your life. The other part of it is if you hit certain things, you're liable for it.
I mean, we kind of know what's out here, but all at the same time, you just always call.
FarmSafe 811 starts with you. Whether you're installing drain tile or doing any sort of digging, always call 811 and wait for any underground lines to be marked and have the depth confirmed. That's farming with care. But if a line does get damaged, go somewhere safe and call 911.
Always keep safety in the back of your mind. Just stay humble.
For more information, go to farmsafe811.org.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location or learn more online, cenex.com. Well, right now, we want to talk about a new announcement from the EPA here just a few weeks ago. Forever chemicals known as PFAS. The EPA is saying they must be removed from tap water in the U.S. We want to talk about this right now. Joining us, he is a partner at the international law firm Dorsey and Whitney. He's been following the EPA regulations regarding PFAS very closely. Gage Zobel is with us. Gage, thanks for joining us here on AOA. Appreciate the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be able to be with you today.
So get us up to speed, Gage, real quick. With this EPA announcement on forever chemicals need to be removed from tap water in the U.S. Can you give us just a quick overview, background on what exactly is going on here before we get into some specifics of what this means?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I think we talk about PFAS, what you have to understand is this has been a focus of the current administration, the Biden-Harris administration, since the time they came into office. And I mean, they located them out and highlighted that this was something they were going to want to tackle from the very beginning. And it's beyond drinking water. So the most recent iteration that we're seeing affects drinking water. It's a drinking water act, but PFAS affects so many different elements of our life. It was a major chemical manufactured, really kind of pioneered by 3M back in the 1970s, with a lot of useful benefits. You know, it's called anti-slickness is what they like to talk about it for. And it's used in foam. I mean, used in ski wax. You name the things it was used in. And I don't think we realize the full implications. But there are harmful effects caused by it, even potentially cancer-related effects. So we've seen a series of rules be promulgated out by this current administration. You know, toxic tort. How are you going to regulate it? How are you going to control it? They even said they might make it a CERCLA issue, and they've notified us for that. So it would qualify for Superfund issues. But this most recent rule that came out, you know, we were expecting CERCLA, but it actually came out with Clean Water Act, or more particularly Safe Drinking Water Act. And what they've really tried to highlight in this current rule is mandating a certain level that water has to be clean to remove these forever chemicals to make sure that we can preserve, you know, human health moving forward. And there's some benefits to that, although there's also a lot of costs. And it affects a wide range of industries. It's not just people drinking water in the city. This could actually affect out into agriculture as well.
Well, let's talk about some of what this could bring about here. You mentioned, you know, some good things, some bad things, some potential challenges. So what does the outlook look like for this? And where do we go from here, I guess, Gage?
Yeah, so look, it's got a long horizon. So it's telling us that any public treater of water that is going to sell it, and that's going to be your normal, you know, municipality water groups, maybe some rural water systems, they've got 3 years they have to monitor. And during that monitoring, they need to make reports on a quarterly basis. But the real hook comes within 5 years, they have to be in compliance with these new regulations. And this regulation puts the amount of PFAS that's allowed in water to be drunk at the absolute lowest level that we can currently have it and pull it out with our current technology. So it's going to have high levels of upgrades to our public water systems to be able to achieve this. So the benefit I see is, number one, we're going to have cleaner water. Hopefully, we're going to remove as much PFAS as possible, but it's going to be at a cost. And right now, the cost everyone's bearing is being exposed to potentially cancerous chemicals. The cost in the future is going to be someone's going to have to pay for these upgrades. And the Biden-Harris administration's basically targeted $1 billion in their Inflation Reduction Act to upgrade the systems. That's not even going to be close to enough. And they're touting maybe some potential $18 billion in a bipartisan infrastructure bill, but we don't even know if that's going to get passed. So ultimately, to meet the mandatory guidelines, you're probably going to see the very customers who don't want to be drinking PFAS have their rates raised, and they're going to have to pay for the system upgrades to make sure that it's going to be clean water.
Well, and that's a great point you raised, because I was going to ask, you know, who's going to end up bearing the brunt of this cost? And it sounds like the everyday consumer, you know, folks in rural America, for instance, are going to be facing a lot of these challenges really across the country, it seems. And, you know, we think about just the costs of everything going up right now. Well, hey, let's tack on the cost of our water bill maybe to that as well here, Gage.
You hit it right on the head. I think that's everyone's fear, is no one wants to drink dirty water. And everyone recognizes there are potential health causes or effects from having PFAS in the water. To the extent that they affect everyone, what's the risk? I mean, who knows? Mm-hmm. I think they're saying, you know, it obviously does have cancerous effects, but I don't know if everyone's affected. What we do know is there's going to be a cost, and that cost is going to be shared down by the consumer level, at least up to this point. How I view it as well is there's one other potential cost that honestly could really hit rural America. And what I see is, look, when you have PFAS infiltration into the groundwater system, it also affects the crops that are grown. And so we could see this be as the beginning of another level of recommendation where we're going to test out on our produce and what comes out to see if there's PFAS within those crops. And we're going to have another level of recommendation there or rule and regulation. And so although it's not directly affecting rural America, because, you know, you're not pumping a water in your own groundwater well and drinking it, that's going to be open to you to do. But in the future, if we're seeing PFAS actually located within the crops that are being grown, and we know that they are, we could see an additional regulation move out. So I view this as kind of a forewarning or a shot across the bow of how we handle this for safe drinking water is how we're probably going to handle it in the future if we're going to start regulating it for the instances that it's actually found in our crops.
And that's a great point. We've obviously seen over the last how many years challenges to Waters of the U.S., the Clean Water Act, et cetera. Maybe to your point, that shot across the bow, maybe this is a new avenue that we see some regulations in that regard that could affect agriculture. Gage, really great thoughts. Before we run out of time and wrap it up here today, anything final you'd want to add as we watch this situation unfold?
You know, I would say watch out for lawsuits. I think we're fully expecting it's going to be challenged. This dropped April 10th. There's 45 days within which they could raise a challenge. And I mean, the whole rule could be overdone in a challenge. So I would say before we get our hackles raised, I would wait to see what legal challenges are brought and see if this stands. And if it stands after an appeal court decision, then I'd get ourselves prepared and start looking for the money that it's going to take to upgrade your water systems.
Well, he's a partner at the international law firm Dorsey & Whitney, Gage Zobel. Gage, thanks for joining us here on AOA today. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again in the future.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. With that, we are out of time here on AOA, brought to you by Sedex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great rest of your day.
The landscape of media has changed, and people are more skeptical than ever about where they get their news and information. While major news outlets show decreasing credibility, your local farm radio station still shows strong marks. In a recent survey, farmers rated information from their farm broadcasters as almost twice as reliable as major news outlets. Farm radio continues to be transparent, honest, and trustworthy. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
And we're back, looking at another lopsided matchup, Jim. Today we have a combine taking on a train.
Yeah, that heavy train is about 1,000 times heavier than the combine. No competition there.
Right, especially given that it'll take at least a mile to stop that train.
That's 18 football fields.
It's no contest. Every day people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
This message brought to you by Operation Lifesaver.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.